You know, I know you hate it when I sing, but
yeah, I do.
It is a special episode, and special episode you gotta sing. Happy, happy birthday. Happy, happy, Rachel. I thought I would do a different song because I have a happy birthday song just sucks so bad, I think. But I thought I could just invent one off the top of my head. How about, what if I do it to the tune of Jurassic Park? Happy birthday, Rachel. It's your birthday now. You're a dinosaur, almost 30 years old. She's trying to turn off the recording.
Star Wars, Transformers, Godzilla, animation, whatever else. Rebels, robots. Etc.
Is it that button?
No, that just will split it into two files.
Oh.
all of this must mean that it's Transformers Night. No. Starformers Zilla Night. Welcome to Rebels and Robots and Rawr! It's been a while since we had a Rawr episode. Episode 86. But it's also a birthday episode for Rachel.
Oh, it's 86.
And I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And she's the birthday girl. And this is our bi-weekly
chat. Birthday girl.
Thanks, Gru. This is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and...
Transformers.
And this week, Godzilla. When was the last time we did a Godzilla episode? Has it been since
Godzilla X-Kong
a year and a half ago? I don't think,
has it really?
I really don't think that we've covered anything.
Do you know what I almost said?
What?
Godzilla X Kong this last March.
No, I mean, it doesn't feel like that long ago. 2024 went fast, I feel like. Let's take a quick look. You think we would know because we're the only ones who would know about this podcast, but let's take a look.
You know who else knows about this podcast?
Transformers, Jurassic Park for 2 months. Gosh, that's a long time.
Yeah, March 28th. No, April 3rd.
Andor.
Gosh, Godzilla X Kong and Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 10 and 11.
Yeah, Skeleton Crew. Yeah, wow.
You know who else knows about this podcast?
I don't know.
My mom.
Oh, that checks out. Yeah. She actually sent me a message today that I have not read. Here's a nice... We haven't even talked about what we're talking about today. We're talking about shit in Godzilla. Because we went and saw it for Rachel's birthday.
Yay!
And sorry, I got distracted by a text message.
I'm so tired.
We're recording way later than we normally do for the day. Was not anticipating talking about Shin Godzilla. But because we'd seen it two times before. At least I had seen it two times before. How many times had you seen it before, Rachel?
Multiple. We watched it together once, and there is it's not uncommon that when I'm like, man, I want to watch a movie, but I don't know what I want to watch, I would genuinely throw on Shin Godzilla for the background.
Nice. For the background. That's a weird... The Japanese original dub in the background, or an English dub?
Let me see which one
even,
I have.
Is there an English dub? There has to be.
There isn't. There is. Let me see which one I have on Amazon Prime.
You know, if you watch the English dub, though, you almost have to have a better English accent than the woman who's supposed to be an American Japanese
Cameron,
woman.
Oh, Cameron, we can watch War of the Worlds.
Man, we're talking about Shin Godzilla. We weren't going to because I didn't think I would have anything to say about it. But after watching it recently, it really I was that Danny DeVito meme. I understand it now.
Understand.
Like, seriously, something really clicked in this viewing. I want looking forward to talking about it. So we will push off, of course, the Godzilla prequel comic and Tales of the Underworld till next episode.
Hold on. Oh, the scene I accidentally skipped to. So we must have watched the English one.
So when you put it on in the background, you put the English dub on?
Yeah.
That makes more sense. I think next time I watch it, I think I would like to. It is so much reading. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. We'll get into it. So before we do Shin Godzilla, we have our usual news, woos, and boos, and then I'll kind of, because it's her birthday episode, I'll open up the floor to Rachel to maybe throw out just a quick tangent if she likes, up to her.
I have no news.
But I also might not have any news.
But our editor is sick this week, so Cameron, you're going to have to do it.
Okay. I'll do it, I guess.
Our editor has a leaky butt this week.
Oh, okay. So I have a bit of news. I guess I'll do it. The only reason it really feels relevant, other than the fact that it involves a Star Wars actor. So this does not give away our location, by the way. This is not geographic.
That sounds like something that's going to give away our location.
I know you like the Chicago Bears football team.
Yes, I do.
What is your relationship with the Chicago Cubs baseball team?
Yes. Big fan.
Great.
Yes.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about this.
Hayden Christensen threw out the first pitch at a Cubs game wearing number 66 as his jersey.
I saw that.
So that's fun.
Did he take out a kid with the baseball pitch?
So glad to see he's out here doing minor celebrity stuff, like throwing out first pitches. That's what I didn't know. I wonder how that was determined. Like, is he from Chicago?
Oh.
Let's take a look. We don't have any news. We have time that we can fill here in this section.
He's
Canadian. I think I knew that, but I forgot.
I've only just seen most of, like, I haven't really seen any news stuff about people pandering social media interactions by posting about Acolyte. Like the Acolyte show.
What about it?
I've just seen people posting a lot about the Acolyte. I have no news because everyone's like, everyone's like, 1 year ago today, the Acolyte got canceled.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, you can listen to our Acolyte episodes about it. But to me, it just feels like a lot of farming interactions because of the people who
You said people weren't doing that, so I got confused.
No, they are. Like, people are like, oh, it's the best thing I've ever seen. And people are like, it's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Look. I rarely jump to those extremes, especially when something just came out. So I don't think it's the worst thing ever. But to act like it's the best thing ever, I think, is an interesting take in the minimum. But also people, like, if you run a social media page or something, most likely you're doing it to get the most extreme reactions possible because that's how you do it. And so you have to say extreme things like that.
We wouldn't have to say who posted
this. The Acolyte was canceled on this day 1 year ago.
I mean, it's what happens when you take the risk.
So, just doing a quick search through Hayden Christensen's Wikipedia, I see no connection to Chicago.
Chicago.
Also, there are so many baseball games in a season that they do random, this is this day, this is that day. So it may have just been a random Star Wars day, and he was the one they could get. But it's still cool nonetheless. Not news, but I am very proud of the thumbnail that I made for our last episode. I called it Dino. I took the Jurassic Park logo, made it Dino Park, and instead of the T-Rex skeleton, it's the Brontosaurus picking up Spike. I thought it turned out really good.
That's good.
I also, the gradient inside of Dino, the word Dinobot, I did that myself. I didn't, like, use a generator.
I'm very proud of you. Look at you putting those skills to work.
So that was fun. That was one of the more fun thumbnails I've gotten to make. I think that's slim pickings right now. And I'm not talking about the actor. I'm going to scroll through here real quick just to see. I always rely on you for news, so I didn't think I would need to come up with it.
I've been a little preoccupied almost week.
Let me think. Yeah, I mean, I guess because Star Wars stuff has slowed down so much, and so has Transformers. Man, we're really coming into an odd era for our individual subjects. I keep seeing more rumors about what's his face? Michael Bay being interested in Transformers. That doesn't make any sense to me. I cannot imagine making 5 films in a series and wanting to come back and do more. For a series that honestly doesn't make a lot of sense for him.
It's always about the money, Spider-Man.
I know we spent a whole summer talking, you know, hot bot summer, talking about this.
Throwback.
But I feel like we never quite talked about Bay himself as a director. What?
Not like as a director, but we did talk about his questionable inclusions.
Oh, yeah. We talked about him as the director of those movies. But I never really thought to question, throughout the question of why he's even doing those in the first place. Because they don't make a lot of sense for him. Because those are like the only, like, science fiction, fantasy, whatever you want to call it, movies he's done. Everything else he's done, while very heightened, technically take place in reality. Like, they're not, they don't include paranormal or magical elements. And, like, they're all, like, just kind of just action films or historical, like he did, like, Pearl Harbor's historical film, big quotes around that, technically based on a historical event.
On the mythical land of Hawaii.
Yeah. So, I guess what I'm saying is he was not the most obvious choice for that. And the fact that he kept making them is quite bizarre. And yeah, I don't really have much more on top of that. I just, it's bizarre that he made 5 to begin with. It's bizarre, the idea that he would make more. I mean, that is kind of where a lot of directors are finding themselves these days. If they want a big budget and a modicum of control, they kind of have to do a franchise. And his last few films have definitely bombed. So,
he's like, yeah. I know what'll make me money.
I feel like I saw something. Oh, I actually watched the trailer. I feel like we may have talked about this. There is another dinosaur movie coming out this weekend.
Primitive War. Actually, yes.
Yes, it is a, we briefly talked about it. It is a Vietnam War film where they come across some, what is supposed to be somewhat more realistic looking dinosaurs. They have like feathers and stuff. It looks like it could be good. I think at first I was really skeptical because the trailer was not showing the dinosaurs much.
Yeah.
But as the trailer went on, you saw a lot of the dinosaurs, which makes me maybe wonder if you've seen all the good stuff in the trailer. But, you know, it's almost identical to Kong Skull Island. But, you know, war era music. It's such a fun aesthetic. You know, it could be good. Though it is also, they're only releasing it for like 5 days. It's not getting a normal release. So that is not the biggest indicator of quality right there.
I heard rumors that, and I don't know if this is actually confirmed or not, but I've heard rumors that they might have used AI in the film.
Oh, interesting.
But look, we can disparage, we can talk about, no, let's not talk about AI on my birthday podcast. But like, sometimes things are just bad. It just doesn't automatically mean they're AI.
Sure.
But sometimes people are like, that's AI. It's like, what's your,
yeah.
Granted, first of all, we'll talk about Shin Godzilla. We definitely saw a trailer for like these dinosaur cookies.
Oh, yeah.
We definitely went, is that AI?
Specifically Jurassic Park branded dinosaur cookies.
It felt like AI.
No, it looked very off.
It was like those children. That boy. Right? It was like kids in a museum, and everything was all super.
Let's see if I can find it.
Super saturated, super bouncy, and just, it felt off enough that we definitely felt like AI. That could have been AI.
Mother's chocolatey dynamite dinosaurs.
I don't like that. So,
let's see if I can find a video. There's an official post on the Jurassic Park subreddit. Not official. There is a post on the Jurassic Park subreddit for 7 months ago about this. I can't believe we missed this. This should have been news on the podcast.
This is what happens when we stream too much without ads.
That's true. Yeah, when you don't see ads. Yeah, it's so true. Okay, let's see if I can find this ad. Sesame Street Jurassic Cookie from 10 years ago. Well, I'm at 33 million views. Add that to watch later. There are like people reviewing it.
Mm-hmm. There is actually some other news. Shin Godzilla is being re-released again in select theaters at the end of the month, but in black and white.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
We just go watch it again. We could just go see it again, Cameron.
Uh-huh. I think black and white, it would lose a lot. Because I think the colors of that film are so important. At least
they've started doing that. They also released Minus One in black and white.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so Shin Godzilla as well, more, you know, more homage to the original.
Oh, no, this is definitely AI. Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't watching it that closely, and I missed it. It starts with these close-up shots.
Yeah.
Of the it's this is
bad.
Awful. Whoa. That's crazy, dude. Well, anyways, I still okay. Here we go. Just skimming through here for Star Wars news. Nothing much.
In case you didn't know, The Acolyte was canceled 1 year ago yesterday.
I'm trying to think. I feel like there was something announced in the last week or updated or a trailer. So we didn't quite finish talking about. We got off on AI. That took us down a rabbit hole. Primitive War. I think I'll wait and see how the reviews are. Not that like that is always an indicator, but like if the reviews are terrible, I'm not going to waste my time. But if the reviews, you know, are generally positive, I would be interested in maybe doing it on the pod. That we'd have to go see it this weekend. Maybe not have time. I guess we'll see.
Are you going to see Weapons this weekend?
You are? Mm-hmm. You have to tell me how it is? I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Allison and I, funny thing about Weapons, Allison and I went and saw Superman again. And on our way out, we were kind of just like peeking our head in on different movies, just, you know, watching a scene. And then the poster on the outside said Freakier Friday. And so we went in and from the music, it was just kind of a somewhat innocuous scene of a kid riding a bike through but we walked in and I was like, is this it? And I was like, I think I know what this is. I don't 100% know that it was Weapons, but I'm pretty confident that it was. As soon as I walked in, the music was just too ominous to be in Freakier Friday.
Bad vibes. I mean, I feel like bad vibes are already existing in Freakier Friday, but
yeah, but this was way worse. I actually was listening to a podcast here recently of the director, and he came from a comedy background. I'm talking out loud because there was something I feel like that was actually podcast relevant about him. Let's take a look. He came from the Whitest Kids You Know, which is very famous.
The what?
Whitest Kids You Know was a sketch comedy show.
Okay. I just genuinely didn't hear what you said. I was like, huh?
Okay. So here's a podcast relevant element. Weapons features Alden Ehrenreich, actor of Young Han Solo. But Zach Cregger is the director. I thought he had maybe worked on something podcast relevant, but maybe not. I guess not. But it is funny, just with how popular Wise Kids You Know was when I was in middle school. Clip, like it's kind of one of the early, it was like kind of concurrent with YouTube taking off. So clips from that show would get big on YouTube. And then for that guy to go on and become a director, like a well-regarded horror director is pretty wild. Him and, Jordan Peele from, I'm blanking on the name of his show, Key and Peele. You set me off. Why am I tangenting? It's your birthday. Is there anything you'd like to chat about before Shin Godzilla?
I actually don't really have anything.
See, last week I asked you a Transformers question about the cassettes
And they're just little guys.
Yeah, they're just little
dudes.
It's
like if it's like if I wore a holster and Athena lived in it.
See, I was trying to remember. I heard you say that, but I didn't really fully process it. That was really, really funny. What you specifically said was, it was like if I could fold Athena up and put her in my pocket and she talked. I mean, that was the part that I missed. Good stuff.
She already does everything else except folding up in my pocket, so.
Well, Shin Godzilla.
Yeah.
2016 film, yes. I believe. Was... I would be curious to figure out because so pretty much they kind of ended the Godzilla saga in the early 2000s in Japan with Final Wars, I believe. I've never seen it. I'm talking purely off like secondhand information. And then America made their own Godzilla in 2014. And this being called Shin Godzilla, Shin roughly translating to like true or real, I believe, is from Japanese.
Return or? Oh. Not my Wi-Fi going out.
Let's take a look. Let me double check my facts here. Because the guy who directed this, he's adapted a lot of famous Japanese media properties into film, and they're all Shin, whatever. Has multiple meanings depending on the context, including new, true, heart, mind, and spirit. So I think. Both that new and true feel relevant to this. Mm-hmm. And that especially that true element kind of feels like a response to the American one of like the American one came out and I feel like maybe the Japanese, is it Toho, right?
Toho.
Maybe felt like they needed to respond maybe, or like, I mean, do we know if they were happy with it? Like, I'm sure they were happy with the money. Do you have any knowledge of how Toho felt about 2014 Godzilla?
I'm looking it up just to because we're in the Reiwa era now.
Okay.
There's a couple different eras of Godzilla films. Of course, you have the original Showa era, 54 to 75, and then you have the Heisei era, 84 to 95. 4-year gap, 99 to 2004. We don't talk about 98 Godzilla. It's not a Godzilla movie. And then, of course, then the Reiwa area, 2016 to present. But it was in December 2014 that they announced the new Godzilla film. And it was after the Legendary reboot. I don't know why they waited. Because we've also had there's the animated Godzilla films that came out on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
That we have not watched. And there's also Singular Point. Do you think maybe they didn't want to make more movies because people probably didn't care for the 98 Gods? Obviously. The 98 Godzilla didn't do well.
Yes,
and it just
the American
wasn't doing
one.
Well, and then it was after 2014, and everyone went, oh, Godzilla's pretty
sure,
cool.
Sure, just the popularity kind of brought it back.
You know, I always thought
possible.
Godzilla was pretty cool. I'm not a bandwagon fan, but that's just me.
I'm trying to find any... Okay, so in December 2014, Toho announced the plans for a new Godzilla film. This is very good timing after the success of the American version. If not now, then when? The licensing contract... We have with Legendary places no restriction on us making domestic versions. Though I'm sure that did kind of maybe interfere with them distributing it outside of Japan. I don't know for 100% sure. I'm just guessing. One of the directors, his name is Shinji. So that, I wonder if that had... Does that play into it being called Shin? Like, is it
I don't know, but he worked on Evangelion.
Yeah, I see
which
that.
Which actually a lot of the fire scenes... Of the aftermath are animated.
That makes sense.
They look very, very anime.
And hold on. I can't get back to, oh, here we go. A blend of practical effects and computer generated imagery was considered for Godzilla. However, Toho settled on a completely CGI monster. Monsai Nomura portrayed Godzilla via motion capture. I did not know that. So that is quite cool.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me, very ending, there's a cool note about practical effects that will be relevant at the very, very end. So, yeah, it kind of feels like just because it was popular, again, as a result of the American one, and it is definitely kind of goes way back to the roots. It does feel like more like a reimagining of the original film. It,
yeah.
Where for majority of the films Godzilla has been in, he is the hero. Mm-hmm. It's lighter in tone.
Well, and they did that, I think, to appeal to kids.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
They're probably like, the ghosts. the ghosts of the victims of nuclear weapons.
That was the original film. Original film was...
Art's appealing to the kids, man.
The original movie was intended to be much more allegorical of post-war Japan.
It was. It wasn't intended. They were come on, guys, maybe they'll understand it. It was very clearly...
His design, his skin was modeled after the scars of people who had survived the nuclear blasts. And as time went on, the films became sillier and goofier. Godzilla himself got more of a personality. So then this movie takes it all the way back.
Well, I think in the Millennium movies, he was going back to he's a jerk.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they reset a couple of times. But I'm saying is majority of the films.
Yes. And then Zilla...
Yeah, the 98 American one.
Was just Lost World.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah Jurassic mm-hmm. Park, Lost World.
Yep, yep.
San Diego scene only in the movie, not in the book, because the book's superior.
But this movie goes all the way back to that allegorical element of Godzilla 1 being very scary.
Mm-hmm. And the result
destructive.
Of humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had not actually that strongly thought about... I know I probably talked about this, but the American, the legendary Kaijuverse 1.
He is a hero.
We've kind of, his origin, we've gotten kind of pieces of it. He is part of a pre-existing species that's been around a long time, but it did seem like the Monarch TV show did imply that nuclear blasts did still affect him and make him bigger.
Yes.
So he's kind of in the middle.
Yes, which is the same with Minus 1, and that's the same, like... So the kaiju in the Monsterverse very clearly feed off radiation. But as we see, each time Godzilla gets nuked, he gets bigger.
Yep.
Shin Godzilla and Minus One specifically were also small. Well, actually, Godzilla Minus One was just kind of like a regular T-Rex, similar to the original one, and then he got nuked.
Yeah.
And affected, but Shin Godzilla. Originated from just an ancient underground sea creature. They don't even say what he was.
Yeah, and most likely some sort of more fish-like. Mm-hmm. His arms...
Or amphibious kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His arms are almost irrelevant in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the existence of his arms is more freaky. His arms look like...
chicken wings.
What is the Transformer... the T-Rex...
Grimlock,
when his arms are just on his back folded up.
They're an aesthetic choice.
Yes.
Also, this movie was made obviously in 2016 after the 2011 tsunami, which damaged the Fukushima nuclear power plant, and it's also a critique on the Japanese government trying to take action, lack of action due to red tape and bureaucracy, which is clear throughout the entire film. There is far more. If you're expecting this going in being like, can't wait to see Godzilla tear apart a city for 2 hours, this is not that film.
No. He probably has like 20 minutes of screen time, which is pretty par for the course for these kind of movies.
I'd say maybe between 20 and 30.
Yeah.
But it's mostly focused on the human cast, and it's just a lot of politics. Yes. But I made. I didn't make people, but me and Cameron and seven other of our friends went and saw Shin Godzilla. Cameron and I had been the only ones to ever see it before.
You really even knew what it was.
Yeah, even actually knew what it was. My friend's husband just asked, is this the purple Godzilla? And we said, yeah. And he was like, awesome. So he had probably seen clips, but not... Sure. The whole thing, and this was a sub, Japanese sub. It was not an English dub. I feel like I saw new scenes, but I have to rewatch my copy. my copy on Amazon Prime. But, so it is a, we kind of follow, oh, forgot his name.
Yeah, I honestly, I could not tell you a single character's name.
Yeah, Yaguchi? Hold on.
Rando Yaguchi.
Ha! That's right. Our main character, Yaguchi.
Yaguchi?
So probably. He is, like, a part of the Japanese government cabinet. He's kind of like an assistant. He gets put in charge of a task force researching the creature. It's 2 hours of people sitting back and forth talking about, what do we do about this creature? And all the while, Godzilla is just tearing things apart. He goes through multiple stages, very fish-eyed, very amphibious, rubber, just mindless animal.
Mm-hmm.
Before he later evolves into, like, the very iconic Godzilla, creepy-looking guy. He's a creepy-looking Godzilla. He don't look right. And so...
The best part about the earlier form is the lack of eyelids. He's like a fish.
He's like a fish!
But his eyes are very unmoving, and in
glassy.
The somewhat less textured CGI model, mm-hmm. the unmoving, unblinking eyes are quite unsettling. A friend of ours,
well, they were all friends. I was sitting next to him at the edge, and he leaned over to whisper something to me, and, like, it's the first time we see, like, Shin Godzilla, where he's all wibbly and wobbly and fleshy, and he was looking at me at the very beginning of the scene, so he didn't see the transition. He looks over and just busts up laughing. And I think he made some other people laugh, too. I think, yeah, there were some people I could tell. I was like, these people have seen Shin Godzilla before. I can tell. I can get the vibe. So we had some veterans of the Godzilla fans. And I think I got a kick out of our friend watching it for the first time, just losing it. It was quite funny. But so, excuse me. One of the biggest, like, issues is that they keep waiting for the prime minister to take action, and he's worried to take action because he doesn't want to cause harm to civilians, but almost his inaction is leading to more harm and devastation. Because he's like, we're not going to send the military in because we're not going to send our troops while there's people in the area. Well, Godzilla is taking down skyscrapers while there's still people evacuating, mm-hmm. like they're dying. Or they're in a cabinet and someone says, we need to do this. And they have to say it to the next chain of command next to them. Like, what? Goes through 4 people before it finally gets to the prime minister.
Mm-hmm. Who and goes, they have to do, like, a press conference to announce everything before they do
time.
It.
Time. So it's, I mean, you see right away just they're wasting so much time. And so one of the, it actually starts off with the Coast Guard going to a boat in the bay. It's an abandoned boat, and it is owned by, I thought I had his name.
An unseen, a scientist who we never see.
Goromaki.
I see. Who the Americans come looking for later.
Yeah, the Americans are in this film, in case you were curious.
Well, kind of.
And so they're trying to figure out who this guy is because it seemed that he knew something. He had documents on his boat that were given to this Godzilla Research Task Force. And the thing about, they don't understand it because this Godzilla is not like a normal being. They eventually find out that he basically just has a mini nuclear reactor hanging out in his chest or in his stomach. And so he is able to basically regenerate from his decay, and he's constantly evolving. Uh-huh. Like, he changes and adapts. By the time the government finally allows, the military to come in and start taking pot shots at him, it's too late. His skin is too thick.
Yep.
And so it doesn't do anything. They're just unloading Apache helicopter rounds into him, and it's not doing anything. And he's just walking. He returns to the ocean, a few times, no, once.
once or twice early on
to cool himself down because he's a reactor and he needs water. And so even then they're like, okay, cool. He's probably not going to come back. And he comes back. And so at this point, obviously, sorry, there's a gnat that I wanted dead.
Get gnat.
It's dead. By the time Godzilla comes back, he's bigger. He's taller. They're like, is he bigger? He is. He's taller. And he's on a mission to go to Tokyo for some reason. It's not really. They think he's going to go feed on a reactor because he eats radiation. But that's not like super confirmed because he just kind of does his own thing. But they do find out his origin is that he was some bottom feeder in the bay, some ancient prehistoric creature. And the dumping of toxic materials into the bay, he ate it. And that's how he became Godzilla. They literally show like photoshopped images of barrels with big bites taken out of them. And we also come to find out that Goromaki, the scientist that they haven't been able to track down, predicted him and also did not tell anyone in his motivation. So he's kind of like, I don't know if we'd necessarily call him a villain, but definitely bystander effect. I don't know. He predicted that. So his wife had radiation sickness from the bombs and is like the government let her die. So he was basically like, I predicted this monster was going to happen and I'm not going to tell anyone. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much that was it. That was his thing. So what was the statement? Do as you want, do as you please, was his final words on the mystery documents he left behind. And it was basically a puzzle from the dead, like figure it out or die trying. So the United Nations is not very happy with how things are not going well in Japan. And
at this point, I'd like to point out our first actor who I've now discovered has a connection to another podcast relevant thing. So it is the actor who plays the integrated chief of staff, which doesn't mean a lot out of context because just to give a little bit of context, every character of any note gets a title card. Like when they show up for the first time, their name and their role is stated. And this is, and also every location is given a name card. And it makes reading the subtitles, because then the subtitles move to the top anytime. So your eyes are going back and forth, and it is a lot, especially at a movie theater.
Big props to my friends for being willing to read a two-hour movie with us. I appreciate it.
So this is the character, the integrated chief of staff.
Oh, okay.
He is the voice of the Parakeet King in The Boy and the Heron.
Nice. That's fun.
Please continue.
No, you're fine. I gotta remember where I was at. Oh, so basically the United Nations is like, Japan's not doing this very well. And so they're like, we are going to help. So when, I'm going to talk about what happens when Shin Godzilla gets to Tokyo. Probably I would say the climax of the film. So Shin Godzilla gets to Tokyo and the Americans have sent in help in the form of B-2 bombers. And so they bomb him once, and it works. He bleeds. This is a nighttime scene. It's very important. People are evacuating. And so Godzilla starts, he's pissed. He opens his mouth and he starts to breathe out gas.
So good.
And you're like, huh. And you watch it just kind of envelop almost like the immediate area within miles of him. And I can't do this scene justice explaining it. You have to watch it. And then he starts spitting fire and it ignites it and just decimates this entire city block. And this isn't like a United States block. It's a ward of a city. And just eviscerates this section of Tokyo, lights it on fire, and then it gets worse because his fire breath transforms into the very iconic atomic beam, but it's almost like a laser cutter.
Yep.
And he just starts going ham, and then it gets worse. The B-2 bombers return to drop more bombs, And Shin Godzilla like doubles over. So his little spiky, you know, Godzilla back is pointing towards the sky. And just 20 lasers shoot out of his back into the sky. And decimate these B-2 bombers. And it's a horrifying thing to watch. Like, Google it, watch it. Mom, if you want my Amazon Prime account, you can watch it. I'll tell you what part to go to. It's a scene, because I remember when we watched this for the first time, we were in and out watching this movie. Like, we kind of would watch for the Godzilla, and we'd kind of, like, go sit on our phones for the rest of it. I remember watching this because we were in college. When it got to the scene, we were just stunned. We were like,
it is mind-blowing.
Oh, my gosh. So, it's bad. It's bad. Shin Godzilla is just destroying this entire ward part of Tokyo. And people are evacuating. And probably in what is almost like the biggest example of waiting too long to do anything, they have been trying to get the prime minister and his cabinet to evacuate. They're like, prime minister, you have to go. And he's like, well, I don't want to leave. There's people here and they're fine. Like, you have to go. Let the governor of Tokyo handle this. I don't know how wards and politics work in Japan.
Sure.
But according to this movie, not well. And so he finally decides, yes, they're going to evacuate in a helicopter. They're lifting up off the tarmac. And a beam from Godzilla comes and sideswipes it and just destroys the entire helicopter. So the lack of action and the waiting is ultimately what destroyed the prime minister and the majority of his cabinet. It's one of those things where it happens and you're just like, oh my gosh.
And you almost do have to be paying attention. Yes. This movie really does demand your attention.
Yes.
Because there's so many details. There's so many things going on. Yeah. And multiple of the people we were watching with missed this detail, missed that. Because if you're not paying attention, you don't see them die. It's just a helicopter. So if you're not paying attention.
You put pieces together of, oh, the prime minister's trying to leave in a helicopter. He finally left.
Yeah.
Dead. So Godzilla destroys this part of Tokyo and then uses actually so much energy that basically it goes into a little hibernation state. He's stuck in the middle of Tokyo. It's a haunting 10 minutes. Truthfully, you know, you're thinking like the first hour or something, you're like, all Godzilla does, he's just walking. And by the time he actually shows his true power, this is a bad Godzilla. This Godzilla just doesn't walk through buildings. This Godzilla is going to wreck all of Japan. And at this point, nothing can stop him. So things are not looking good. The Japanese leadership cabinet is gone, prime minister gone. The guy who gets elected in place is the minister of agriculture, who is so out of touch. He's an older man. He's the minister of agriculture. And I think it states that he was there just because he was a buddy or something, or he supported.
Yeah, he was very loyal. He towed the party line. Yeah.
Yeah. So someone who has, obviously, in the tone of the movie, no business being in that position. And the first scene we see him where they're telling him all these things that are bad, you know, things are bad, all the people that are gone. The scene ends because he had dinner in front of him and he complains that the noodles got soggy. It's just so out of touch for this character. And so we continue to follow Yaguchi, our main character, and his team to try to figure out what is this Godzilla going off of Goromaki's notes. The UN has stepped in because the UN said, hey, this is bad. Things are really bad. So an agreement has been come to that is like they have like a 30-day time limit or something because they are monitoring Godzilla, his radiation levels or something. And they basically have a set amount of time until he's back to full power and he's going to start moving again. He's just hanging out in downtown Tokyo. Solid as a rock. At the end of that timeline, or as soon as Godzilla starts moving again, the US is gonna launch a nuke on Japan for the third time. That was very clearly emphasized. Like, this has happened twice before. Mm-hmm. It'll happen again. And the other countries are, other countries being was like China and Russia. Lots of other countries are like, yep, got to protect our own. So they are trying to prevent their country being destroyed by Godzilla and also their country being destroyed by another nuke. So Yuichi teams up with a, gosh, what's the word? She's not a, she wasn't a congresswoman.
No, she's like an assistant to an ambassador, like envoy.
Yeah, I think something was the term. Like that. Liaison. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. She's supposed to be a Japanese-born American, but nothing about the way she speaks English sounds American at all.
Or American-born Japanese.
Yeah.
Like, her dad is white, because it's like, you have the Patterson last name. It's very That's true. Clear that he's
That's true. So if she's supposed to be half-white American, it's very unconvincing.
Well, it was also very clear that they were like, can you speak, like, not in a bad way, but they were like, you're playing this character who has ties to America, but also has ancestral ties to Japan, because she's like, I can't see another bomb dropped on my grandmother's country. So she has her own, you know, obviously her own personal ties as well. And so they're in a very tough spot. So they finally figure out that the way to decipher Gormaki's code is using origami.
Because I don't fold the printed code up into a... Is it a, like a changing shape or is it one shape?
I think it's a crane.
They keep like unfolding it and folding it back up and I couldn't...
I think you figure out information from each step.
I see. Because I couldn't tell if every time they folded back up it was going back into the same shape or if it was a different
they
shape
did a
every
couple
time.
Different things, I think. I see. So their plan is that they're going to basically deep freeze this guy from the inside out using coagulant, because they're like, if we can kill his center, his nuclear reactor, we can maybe get rid of him. So we are hours before the nuke is supposed to be dropped, and they're finally able to get enough coagulant to start their plan. They basically wake Godzilla up by dropping more bombs on him and missiles, because he kind of started to wake up. They have set charges in a lot of the abandoned skyscrapers and dropping skyscrapers on him to knock him down so the trucks with the tanker trunks with coagulant can get to him. It takes them, the team then detonates nearby buildings and sends unmanned trains loaded with explosives towards Godzilla's feet. I did have to laugh because they had to they specified in the captions on the screen, unmanned trains. I don't know if you noticed that. Subduing it and enabling tankers full coagulant to eject it into Godzilla's mouth. Many are killed, but Godzilla's eventually frozen solid. It takes them two tries. They basically just get these big old poles, and they do freeze him in place with something like, what, minutes before? It was 3 minutes, I think, before the nuke was supposed to be launched. They're super lucky that America wasn't like, it's fine. So they discover in the aftermath that he admitted a lot of radiation, but it's a very short half-life, 20 days. So like in three to a couple years, radiation should be fine. But there's also the looming threat of that if Godzilla wakes up again, they're going to nuke Japan.
Now, didn't they say that they would drop the nuke as soon as he started moving?
Yes, they did.
But they didn't do that. Because he goes on a bit of a rampage here at the end.
Yes, but they were giving them time.
Oh, so they had chosen to give them a chance.
Yes, they had chosen to give them a chance because they made a deal with France that they were going to give them the genetic information they had about Godzilla in a bit of a deal for France to be like, hey, let's give them more time. And then it's also stated at the end that they give out the genetic information to everyone.
Yeah, so that's right.
They're like, sorry, France, but everyone gets it. It ends there kind of with that. Oh, so it doesn't end there. It ends with a conversation between Yuichi and the American ambassador with this really kind of ominous ending of like, if Godzilla moves again, like a loud vehicle, if Godzilla moves again, the threat of being nuked again will happen. Like, it's pretty unimaginable if this doesn't work long term. There's it starts doing some close-ups on Godzilla, frozen Godzilla, and it makes its way up its tail, and its tail also shoots a laser.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So its mouth shoots a laser, its back shoots a laser, mm-hmm. and its tail shoots a laser, and it zooms in on the tail, where also you can see it's like mouth and teeth, horrifying. But the last image is the close-up of this tail, where it looks like humanoid Godzilla creatures were in the process of...
like sprouting.
Sprouting from its tail. And then it ends.
They had discussed earlier in the film that he showed... some sort of data showed that he might be able to start, like, spawning. Like, pieces of him could come off.
There was a cut scene where the CGI exists for it. You can find it online. Where as they were kind of exploring Godzilla, like, some of the aftermath of Godzilla, they found basically a mound of Godzilla flesh with eyes and teeth.
Interesting.
So, like, it had, like, the capability to spawn and continue evolving. So, the implication is that eventually Shin Godzilla would sprout little humans to fight humans.
Yeah.
They almost look very alien-like.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And that's where it ends. It cuts into the main Godzilla theme, and you're sitting there going...
But it's also... okay, so... here's a question for you. In looking at the soundtracks, I love the beat of music that plays over the final conversation between the two lead mm-hmm. human characters. That was a phenomenal piece of music. Also, the final credits. Sorry, never mind. In looking at the soundtrack for this film, a lot of the pieces of music seem to have been taken from earlier Godzilla films. Mm-hmm. Not just the main theme, which is clearly like the mm-hmm. original recording, but they are pulling from movies like Terra of Mechagodzilla.
Yes.
Godzilla versus King Kong really surprised me.
Three-headed monster, Astro monster.
Yeah, so I think that's a really fascinating thing that not only is this trying to take it back and be a updated allegory of how the original one was, mm-hmm. but also still using music from some of the silliest movies in the series.
Battle in Outer Space. And that kind of, because some of our friends were like, what is the music in this film? Because it's not a Western track. It's not a Western movie track.
It is all over the place.
There's one very particular song that plays during Godzilla destroying Tokyo. It is an opera song.
Sorry, as my wife. Okay, continue.
It's an operatic song.
Yes.
Which, when you're watching a Godzilla film, you're like, is that Persecution of the Masses? No, it's Who Will Know. It's a lament from Godzilla's point of view. He doesn't know what he is, because one of our friends asked, what was his goal? There really isn't a goal for Shin Godzilla other than the fact that he's essentially a mindless animal and he's in pain. That's it. That's his motivation. He's hurt.
But also on the exact opposite end, I wish I could find it. The names of the songs are very odd, to put it simply. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of like smooth jazz in the score as well. So you get like very dramatic shifts from one end to the other of tone as far as the music is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You also get very dramatic shifts stylistically as well. You get some like almost like found footage esque elements at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You get some very dramatic anime esque like action sequences mm-hmm. towards the end. You have all these boardroom scenes. You have some of the boardroom scenes are shot very standardly. Other ones are shot almost like as if you're watching them on C-SPAN, like they're lower resolution, mm-hmm. wide angle cameras, like almost like it's a security footage.
One of my favorite scenes is when one of the scientists finally cracks the code,
mm-hmm.
or he finally figures out information about the genetic material where the coagulant will work,
mm-hmm.
and he picks up his laptop and he sets it down on the table, and everyone else starts picking up the laptop, and the POV is from like the laptop.
That, and you're seeing the text. I've seen it
like through the laptop screen. I don't know. I think that's fun.
Yeah.
Because you have like four different people who are like, give me that. It's funny.
I almost wish the movie was a little more consistent in its like in that stylism, because there are some fairly long sequences mm-hmm. where it kind of, especially like in between the final two phases of Godzilla, the movie slows down a lot. Mm-hmm. And it kind of drops its stylistic. It kind of gets too involved with the human characters, who I do find engaging. But when there's not an immediate threat from Godzilla, it does feel a little slow in that section. So what I'm saying is I totally agree. I love the kind of fun little surprise stylistic flares. But when it goes away, the movie definitely suffers as a result.
I think, here's a couple of things that were cut idea-wise from this film. Godzilla was supposed to have more forms. We know that. I think there was like 6 or 7 that he was supposed to have, including like a very humanoid one, which was cut. There was a scene. I think I've seen this one on YouTube. It's not finished, but Godzilla throws up blood. Mm-hmm. And so his blood is boiling. That is how he regulates himself. His blood is boiling, so he has to like get rid of it. He throws up blood, which floods the city and melts things. I actually saw this one. There was a scene with, it's where.
Sorry, I'm trying to find that. I'm listening. I'm just trying to find that bit of jazz music.
So there was a scene where after, I think it's after the, initial rampage, not before he destroys Tokyo, but the initial one where this scene cut was really funny to me. They're like, the prime minister needs to go down. The cabinet needs to see the damage. And it cuts to just the entire cabinet in the rubble, standing and watching the rescue crews. Uh-huh. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So that there's a scene cut from there because we see Yaguchi, he prays.
Oh, interesting.
There's a scene cut where you see the rescue teams carrying a body on a stretcher and a grieving family following it, wow, like a mother and her children. The body was covered. You can see it on YouTube, but that's why he prays. Mm-hmm. So that was one. And then the one where they find like the Godzilla flesh on the floor, on the ground with eyeballs and teeth. That's an
interesting choice to cut that. So this is not the jazz song I was talking about, but so here's what most of the music in the film sounds like. You know, very
this one
Godzilla, but then there's this. So this is an example of the very dramatic tonal shifts in music. Rachel, I mean, I think it's probably pretty obvious, but a summation, what makes this Godzilla different than other Godzillas?
I think because so the main thing with Godzilla films is you have Godzilla. The Godzilla who is wrath and vengeance, and then you have the Godzilla who is the hero.
Mm-hmm.
This Godzilla is neither. By, like, human point of view, he's a villain. You know, you're like, this is a monster that needs to be stopped, but he's really not. And if anything, this Godzilla is a monster of humanity's own creating. Now, okay, that's all Godzillas, but it's very poignant in this film that this Godzilla, almost all of his attacks are actually defensive.
Sure.
He doesn't really do anything until he's been hit. Yes, he's taking down buildings. That's bad. But it's not like he's perfect. He's really just mindless. He's basically a fish.
Yep.
Athena does things with purpose. Godzilla really doesn't. I have the scene.
So real quick, here's the jazz music. This is on the soundtrack for Shin Godzilla. Anyways, please continue.
Oh my gosh, it's after the first rampage.
Yeah, it says early morning from Tokyo.
It's the news clips where we just watched him rampage through all these boats, this horrifying creature, and the next shots are people being like, anyways, on to the morning news. That's what it is. It's just a news cut.
Hilarious.
So this scene is Godzilla's Blood and Flesh. That's what it's called. I didn't name the YouTube video. It's 30 seconds, so I am going to make you watch it, Cameron.
Okay.
It's in Japanese, so just do your best.
So they're
three guys in hazmat suits walking through destruction. The bit of this mush. Is that a single eyeball in the middle?
Yeah.
It just fell down in front of them. This is very much like The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm surprised they cut that. I guess if you emphasize too much, then the ending is less of a surprise. Because I had never even caught in my first two viewings that they talk about his ability to potentially like reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ending didn't make a lot of sense to me. This time I finally caught the line of dialogue. And so the setup for the ending makes a lot more sense. Speaking of which, fun note about, so this says that the only physical prop of Godzilla that appears on screen is a model of Godzilla's fifth form sprouting from his tail, which was a sculpture. So that's
a practical effect.
Which is really cool. So I'd like to talk about just some highlights. I remember my first viewing of this film, not knowing much. The trailers were pretty sparse when it first came out. Mm-hmm. You couldn't really get a lot about it. I think that was very much on purpose. And to see, kind of feel everyone else's reaction the first time Godzilla shows up in this movie and he cannot stand up and he's just
so
belly flopping through with his lifeless dead eyes and kind of shaky CGI, it's quite shocking. You don't know. I mean, if you don't, there's no reason to anticipate this. Because it's so weird and so bizarre.
You're like, where's Godzilla?
Amazing.
And you're like, that's not Godzilla. And actually, the first thing you see is his tail flipping around in the bay, too.
Yeah.
You're like, what is that?
Uh-huh.
And then when you next see him, he's just this little slinky guy with horrifying gills and fish eyes.
But the thing that really connected with me on this viewing, so like it's really easy to watch this movie and enjoy the Godzilla stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really easy on a few first viewing to come away from this movie as I did my first two viewings, which was this is like any other Godzilla film in that the Godzilla stuff is amazing and the human stuff is just doesn't suck. It doesn't feel like it's poorly acted or written. It just kind of feels on my first two viewings felt irrelevant like most Godzilla stuff. But the Godzilla stuff is exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty easy surface level thing to take away from this film. And then this third viewing, I just clicked with me. I was able to like, after having seen it two times before, really pay attention to the human stuff. Really get that you have to really pay attention and feel. You're not gonna get. They're not overtly. Now they do have one character kind of call it out. But the fact that it is just the bureaucracy is the point, and it is critical and satirical in that way. So if you're just watching it and you're not paying attention, you feel like, oh, this is a lot of boring boardroom meetings. But that's the point.
That's the point. They all have a point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's intended to be overwhelming. It's intended mm-hmm. to be monotonous. It's intended to be, this is ridiculous. Nothing. Where it feels like nothing is happening in these scenes, that's the point. Nothing is getting done, and you really have to...
I love that you've come to this realization.
And I think people would say, oh, yeah, I mean, I got... But, like, that is the point in the political mm-hmm. satire there. It's like... And if you can sit and just feel the larger picture, the contrast of the... Godzilla's outside wrecking the city... And these guys are having board meetings and not accomplishing anything.
And they're having meetings to have board meetings.
Yes. Yeah, they're setting up meetings. The same people will just go to a different room. At one point, they're in a meeting and something changes. And they're like, oh, this meeting has changed. We have to go to a different room. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
One of our friends, I was sitting closer to him than you were. And he just goes, they're just having meetings about meetings. And I'm like, you got it. And they even mention a lot of times, they're like, oh, there's so much red tape, we're not getting mm-hmm. anything done. And then also you have some really interesting tone shifts, because after the prime minister and, like, most of his cabinet are sent with same-day shipping to the afterlife
uh-huh.
by Godzilla, there's a political void. So the minister of agriculture is in prime uh-huh. minister seat, and he's not really doing anything. So you have Yaguchi and kind of like these younger guys stepping in from like assistants to fill in the positions for right now. And there's even a spot where Yaguchi's talking to a party member, political guy, like one of the party leaders or something, or just like an assistant. And he's like, well, they have a whole side conversation about, well, hey, you want to be prime minister? And Yuguchi's like, ah, probably not for 10 years. And we're having this very casual conversation about like their political aspirations, mm-hmm. all while Tokyo is like,
yep,
decimated. And I don't, and I'm not saying, and I'm not saying that as like a negative to the characters. I mean, honestly, probably in that horrifying situation, you probably want some normalcy. That could be shock, but it's just interesting that, you know, it's like there's millions of refugees. And there's a, hey, remember me when you're prime minister in 10 years. Give save me a secretary seat. So it's just, it is interesting. I'm glad you picked up on that. I was also really glad that I think every single person enjoyed that film.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot to love about it.
I was kind of hesitant when I posted in our group chat and I was like, hey, friends, we're going to go see Shin Godzilla. Heavy warning. It is a political movie. It's a very political movie with some Godzilla. Yeah. And I wanted to be like, don't expect going in to see 2 hours of Godzilla because it's not. So I was very pleased to get out and people were like, I loved that. Mm-hmm. I was like, yay.
And I think it helps that since my first viewing, if I don't remember when my second viewing was.
We watched it with Caleb, I think, didn't we?
Very possibly. That would make sense.
Caleb, longtime fan, occasional guest, also loves this movie. We're probably missing information that he's into.
But I think it helps that I have seen also 3 times Chernobyl. Chernobyl is very, I mean, look, we bring up Chernobyl a lot on this, but both are about, man, people really screwed the pooch. The red tape, the government, the political alignments got in the way of solving this problem.
The
and people
radiation.
Are dead. But in the end, if we can get everyone to work together, even in spite of the government, we can get stuff done. Very similar basic threads there. And so having just seen Chernobyl 3 times, and that just lives in my back of my soul, that helps this movie make more sense.
I bought that on DVD. So that way big HBO Max couldn't take it from me.
Yeah, so that when, I don't know.
Streaming becomes
when Shell Oil buys buys Warner Brothers and decides to delete even more stuff. But I think, though, what I was saying, though, about it is important to also consider the ending. I think it's really easy to, like, look at the first third or first half of a movie and think that's what the movie's about. And that certainly is relevant, but also you have to consider where things end up. And yes, the red tape, yes, the bureaucracy get a lot of people killed, but also people working together, people pooling the resources, mm-hmm. people being dedicated solves the problem.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it was interesting because one of the side effects is because the Japanese government is like, one thing they hit a lot on is one of these systems called it. They call it a vassal colony. They didn't call it a vassal country, I think.
Okay.
How in a post-World War II,
mm-hmm.
Japan is very controlled by other world powers. I don't know if I want to say for obvious reasons, but like.
Everyone knows Japan's role in World War II.
Yeah, it's pretty. Collar tug.
But China knows what Japan's role in World War II was.
Yeah. So there's that big, also that idea where the older members of the cabinet were like, well, we can't do this, or this is how we're going to be seen. We can't do this, or this is how we're going to be seen. This is how, this is what are we going to look like? We can't send soldiers. We haven't sent soldiers into civilian areas since the war. And so you see the younger generation with Yuji in there who are willing to take these chances to kind of save their own country. And so Goromaki's do as you please comes back perhaps it's time to do what we please and not just what the bigger powers are telling us to do. And in a way they do save their country by doing that. So I think I would not say like the human cast of this movie is as endearing as Godzilla Minus One. It doesn't help that there are three times as many characters all trying to share the same screen at once. But you do have this, it's like, be the change you want to see. If you, you know, hopefully your whole cabinet doesn't go up in flames and then helicopter, but, taking these risks in order to take action and save.
The contrast of Godzilla Minus One is an interesting one because, like, this film feels very cerebral. It's a political satire.
Godzilla Minus One is a hater through and through.
Oh, the Godzillas are more similar than they are different. Well, I'm talking about the films themselves. Mm-hmm. Shin Godzilla is very cerebral. It's a political satire. It's very talky. There's a billion characters. It's very modern. And it's the Godzilla is terrifying mm-hmm. and soulless. Whereas Godzilla Minus One, the film, is very heartfelt, very emotional.
Yes.
It's a period piece. It's the farthest back a Godzilla film has been set. It's very much about community and heart. And while both kind of end up in the same place as far as like everyone working together despite the government mm-hmm. and still living in the fallout of World War II.
Ha, fallout.
There isn't really like a big like heroic mm-hmm. human moment in Shin Godzilla. It's kind of like we barely survived.
Yeah.
Whereas like Godzilla Minus One feels very, what would I call
triumphant.
It? Triumphant. Thank you.
Because at that point, Godzilla is like defeated, mm-hmm. quote unquote. There's a sequel. The thing that's very interesting with the ending of Shin Godzilla is that it leaves you with the question of, what are they gonna do with Shin Godzilla?
Yeah.
Are they just going to have to keep pumping him with coagulant 24/7 to keep him dead? Mm-hmm. Is this an upkeep they're going to have to do? Are they going to build around him like some monument? Are they going to try to move it? This is like, I think, actually canonically, the heaviest Godzilla in existence.
Mm.
I want to double check that. Godzilla waits.
It's also interesting, taking a step back to the parallels between this and Minus Got One, both he's end with a tease of some sort of like ability to infect or reproduce smaller versions of itself.
Yes.
Like, we don't quite know what the implication of the ending of Godzilla Minus One is with the wife who survived, or the girlfriend. Were they married? I can't. It's been a year and a half.
Cohabiting.
Yeah. Cohabiting. Love interest.
Cohabitants to lovers. I don't know.
She had those veins on her neck. We don't know exactly what that means, but it still is like somewhat parallel to the end of Minus One or Shin Godzilla in that there's this implication of just like more of that there's going to be a problem there could be more issues outside of Godzilla himself. Godzilla is causing smaller issues in small form. Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to like fully accurately describe how they're similar.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead, please.
If you'd like to know how much Godzilla weighs.
Yes.
So, technically, Godzilla from Godzilla X Kong is the heaviest at this point.
Okay.
But, 99,000 tons. Oof. Almost 97. Wow. Almost 100,000 tons. When he started, he was 90 in 2014. In 29... But for a time, Shin Godzilla... I'm talking about live action. The
yep.
Godzilla Earth was the biggest, obviously. Yeah, yeah, he's like the size of a planet, duh. But Godzilla, Shin Godzilla was the most at one time with 92,000 metric tons. That is a big guy.
Yeah.
And he's kind of tall and skinny, so he's so heavy. It's also interesting if you look up a size comparison of Godzilla Minus One, he's one of the smaller Godzillas. He's
his
like,
tail certainly contributes a lot, though, too.
Yes, but he's kind of old. He's a little guy.
He's a slim boy.
He's a little boy. But Shin Godzilla is super heavy. So how are they going to carry 92,000 sure. tons? Are they going to cut him into pieces? That seems like a terrible idea. You can't. He's getting tanks and missiles, like eating tanks and missiles like it's nothing. Not actually eating, but just like...
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where you're left with... What do we do with this? Like, this is a constant reminder of what's going to be happening. And I think you can relate that to the presence of nukes in general. Radiation. Now, I actually think nuclear energy is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it would be very useful for humans. It's had some... When it's bad, it's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
When people like the Soviet Union... take out the kill switch because it could be seen as a flaw.
Uh-huh.
And then when bad things happen, they can't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, I think you can kind of relate to that of, all right, World War II has unleashed the possibility of using nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
How do we live with that? How do we live with the reminders of radiation poisoning, of cities that were decimated by nuclear bombs? How do we live with that memory?
Sure.
And how do, and I think, and it leads to the question, how do we prevent that again from happening ever again? So that it just ends, you know, like there are a lot of really triumphant Godzilla movies where Godzilla's the winner. He beats the guy, you know, Godzilla kills the Muto and shimmies off to the sea. In 2014, he kills Ghidorah. He roars in San Francisco. He gets bowed to by the kaijus. Pretty cool. Pretty triumphant. I think a lot of Godzilla movies end with, how do we live with this now? And I think Shin Godzilla, especially so, because he's in the middle of Tokyo, probably the most, one of the most populated cities in Japan. I didn't Google that. I'm speaking out my mouth. Well, that's just a reminder. It's the, what do you do with it? How do you prevent it from happening again?
And to go back to talking about the ending versus the first half, that, I think that's very reminiscent or like resembled, emblematic. I don't know. It is represented by the depiction of the guy who takes over as prime minister. When we first see him, he's depicted as kind of a goofball. He's worried about his noodles more than his job. But then he ends up doing something. I don't remember exactly. He like convinces someone to do something. He convinces
France, the genetic company, to run the because they need supercomputers. He convinces France to run the genetic material with the deal. And then I think France is also like, hey, before we nuke Japan again, let's try this alternative. So he does. He pulls his weight with that.
Yeah. So he changes the young woman envoy. She ends up giving up on her job just to help.
Does she give up on her job?
I got the sense that she did, because she walked off the plane.
I don't think it was necessarily giving up on her job. I think it was just, if this goes south, this can ruin you politically.
Yeah.
Because they talked about, like, mud sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also willing to stay there even if the country got nuked.
I see. Yeah. So at the very least, she was willing to.
Mm-hmm.
She was standing by Japan rather than what kind of she was expected to willing in her job.
To take risks in the public eye in order to do what was right.
But also to go even further back and talk about that, in order for this movie to feel good outside of just the Godzilla stuff, you have to pay attention. The movie does not, like, there's a lot going on, and it does, if you're paying attention, say the things, but it doesn't spell out necessarily what it's about. In the sense of, like, there's the one opportunity they really do have to kill Godzilla is when he's in his second form.
Yeah, when he's fleshy.
And he stands up the first time, and he's just standing there.
Yes.
And the helicopters are in position to destroy him, and they don't because there are a couple of civilians spotted in the area. And so that's a point of argument in our group, was what they should have done there.
Yeah.
And I argue the film is implying that
a couple
of different things. One, the helicopter pilots have to wait for approval to fire in that area in that time, and they don't.
Well, they finally get the permission to do it,
yeah,
and they call off because they're civilians.
Yeah, and why are you grabbing your microphone?
I was adjusting it.
Why? Because if you grab it by the microphone, you can hear that. You can adjust it back here, and you can't hear it. There was another element of, oh, and they say if we have any collateral damage, it'll look really bad for the self-defense force.
Yeah.
So you have two different things going on there that are not necessarily being called out explicitly, but one, their motivations for not, they're not avoiding firing because they don't want to lose any more lives. They're doing it because they don't want to look bad. But then there's also too many chains of command. The people who, theoretically, the people who would have the best opportunity to make the decision are the pilots themselves, but they're having to wait
through, and like, 10 different people.
And if they had just been able to fire as soon as they showed up, the chance of collateral damage was very, very small. It was two people who were not even that close, and it's portrayed as comedic, which I think the point of the comedy there is to show that this is actually not that big of a deal. And if anything, They're missing the point. Like, and also, I think you can make the argument by not being decisive then. Yes, it would have been a tragedy if those two people had died.
Mm-hmm.
But thousands, hundreds of thousands of people die as a result of them not doing it.
Yeah, there's like no win situation.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that that scene right there really is emblematic of the film's criticism to me, is that the people who should be, because it's really easy to watch this movie and think, well, yeah, but you need a, you, like, who else is going to make these decisions? If you have a, like, only the military. I can hear that receipt, by the way.
Sorry.
Else, Rachel decided just to start looking through a PetSmart receipt. Is that what you got your birthday gift for yourself? Was from PetSmart?
The wet food I bought for Athena to try to help her gut biome, only for her to gag at it. Have you noticed she hasn't eaten at all? Because I don't think she can stand the smell.
Poor girly. That scene is emblematic of what the film is saying, because I think you could very easily be like, oh, well, who else could organize this government? Like, who else could organize the military if not for government? Like, if there was no government at all, then Godzilla wouldn't be able to be stopped. I don't think the movie is against the government. It's not an anarchist film.
I am not.
It's against the unnecessary. It's that it's seemingly in order to, it very, this is where also I think it's very, very similar to Chernobyl, is that no one wants to take responsibility.
Yep.
And that is the biggest problem.
Exactly. Because, you mean, do you even see the conversation where they're like, oh, well, the governor of Tokyo can handle this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They're trying to leave. And yeah, I mean, yeah, on the one hand, you could say, oh, I think everything that they do is understandable, but ultimately is, if you thought about it for a couple seconds, there are better choices to be made. The reason the prime minister and all his cabinet are leaving is because, oh, we have to worry about the rest of the country, which is true, yes, and but also, that's just, it's also like you get so far deep into bad decision-making that you almost can't get out of it. And all this to say, I think the film is, all this clicked with me for the first time on my third viewing.
I'm so glad. I love and, that for you.
So I do think it is a bit slow in some places and could have been tidied up. The first half is incredible. The Godzilla stuff is incredible. It ends so strong. Big fan. Love it. Glad that we saw it again. So glad to get to see it in theaters.
Oh, it was very amazing. Cool. Some of my favorite shots are like the very wide shots of neighborhood residential areas.
Yeah.
And just like the really tiny Godzilla in the back in the skyline. Those are some of my, it's almost like find Where's Waldo, but like where's Shin Godzilla? You can see him in a lot of those background shots. And I actually really like it. The friend I was sitting next to did fall asleep.
Oh my God.
For about 10 minutes. Yeah, maybe. Fair. And it was after the Tokyo destruction, and it was when they were trying to figure out the genetic coding. I kind of heard, like, I heard some deep breathing, and I kind of looked over, and he was asleep. And I was like, should I wake him up? I was like, no, he's fine. And then he kind of, like, stirred. And so he woke up, and I asked him, I'm like, did you have a good nap? He goes, I didn't nap.
Where were you watching Shin Godzilla on your phone?
Amazon Prime.
Do you own it on Amazon Prime? Oh, okay, that makes
sense. I own it on Amazon Prime.
Can you tell me if
no.
All the titles in like locations and stuff are in your version?
That is such a good question.
You had thought that was maybe not in the original version.
Maybe because I have the dubbed. I was
because I would be very interested to know, because that could just be in there because they think foreign audiences just don't know enough about Japan, but I think that's in there to increase the satirical element. That, I think for the viewer who has not seen this film, it's really important. Every time a character, especially when you have the first third of the film, when there's so many new characters, there are rooms full of men meeting. There's also, we haven't even talked about the gender element. Like sexism.
I was like, what?
Yeah, the gender element of this film. I think there are some interesting underlying gender elements because there's very few women in this film. And when they talk, the way they're treated and the way that they interact. But I'm not going to go into that because we've talked a lot about this and it's time to wrap up. But I think that those titles are not included just for clarity. If anything, it makes it less clear. It's so distracting.
I have not seen...
It is so incredibly distracting, and it fills, they're huge. These titles are not small, they're huge. They fill the screen.
So this is the dubbed version.
And I think maybe in this new version, maybe they went back and they're very stylized the way that they're presented. I think this is a creative choice, in my opinion. If not necessarily a creative choice, I think it does heighten the satirical element of the film in that Not only because you as the viewer do not need to know all these titles, but it's helping you understand the bureaucracy, because I think it's really easy to watch a scene and you have a room full of men all in suits. You're not really going to think about who all these guys are, but when every time someone talks, you get their title and you get their hyper specific, how specific their roles are. Mm-hmm. It really helps you get a sense of there are too many people. This is too many people involved. And I actually really love that. So good satire, incredibly scary. When Godzilla's...
This is scary Godzilla.
When he just lights the city on fire and then shoots lasers out of his back.
It's like...
And it's all in darkness and he's just glowing red. He's the only light source.
He's glowing right around his neck and it looks like an evil grin.
Yeah.
It looks like a twisted smile.
Big fan. Love it. It definitely stands out. I think that's another incredible element, is that there are so many Godzilla films, and to still come up with, still be creative, still be original.
Apparently it's made more money on its re-release than it did in 2016.
Wow.
But I also heard that might be due to marketing.
Sure.
They're probably like,
No, I think the bare minimum in the United States, it definitely is probably making more money. We had a pretty good turnout in our screening.
We did.
Like there was people there.
Big props to the guy who came out after us, and I said, hey, I just forced all my friends to watch Shin Godzilla with me. Will you take a picture of us? He's like, yeah, absolutely. If they decide to release another Godzilla film for my birthday, I almost made that my Instagram caption. I almost wrote, thank you, director, for releasing Shin Godzilla for my birthday. But it wasn't gonna fly outside of like the four people who would get that.
Sure.
If they release Minus One again in theaters, we're going. Or I'm going.
I would love to go see it again. That was such a good time.
I have it on DVD.
Definitely. Allison's not seen it. We need to show it to her. I'd like to maybe have her on to talk about it. I think that would be a good thing to bring her on for the podcast. I was interested in doing both in one episode. We just didn't get a chance to watch it.
That'd be a lot.
Meme minute. But it's longer than a minute. Maybe. I don't have any memes.
I have two memes.
Okay. Go for it.
Sock got wet.
It's a roaring Godzilla.
It's a roaring Godzilla caption. Nice. Sock got wet. And then, hey, do you want to hang out tomorrow? Me, can't. I'm busy. What I'm doing? Shin Godzilla in theaters. Quite literally, actually had that happen this weekend.
This, okay. That reminds me of a video. This is not directly podcast related, but still feels somewhat relevant. Let me see if I can find it. I thought I sent it to Allison. Maybe I did not. I really thought that I did. Oh, yep, there it is. Okay, the thumbnails is very strange. Okay. My assigned government agent tracking my activity for the week. Did you see it? It's a map, and it's like... So it's a clip from...
Home movie theater.
It's a clip from... dang it. What's it called? Breaking Bad. The government agent who's like investigating someone, he's got a map... Like a satellite image, and it's got a path, and it's different colors. And he's like, look at this. And it just marked home, and the destination is movie theater. And it's like, it's just implying that that's the only place he's going every day. It's really funny.
The extremely intelligent Godzilla, after I ask him if I should stop blowing all my money gambling at the casino. Oh, okay, hold on.
He's shaking his
head. He shakes his head, no.
Good stuff.
I have another one.
Okay.
Because I sent these to the Rebels and Robots Instagram, but they've been ignored, so I'm going to show them now.
When? When did you send them?
Yesterday at 9:18.
Oh, yesterday.
Yesterday at 7:38 p.m. Yesterday at 10:22. August 13, 8:30.
August 13?
August 12th.
What?
The 12th and the 6th, and that one is deleted, so now we don't get to know what that one is.
Because I looked at them recently. So I probably just missed the last couple.
So, Tay Colma at Mon Mothma's daughter's wedding.
I know this might be bad time right now, but you owe me $32,000 in legal fee.
Sorry, I was trying to figure out whether I ignore these or not. Show it to me again.
Tay Colma and Mon Mothma's daughter's wedding. For your memory, that's her friend.
I heard the meme and now I got it.
So it's
that's good. Cars. No, that's real good.
I got another one. Japan's early warning system when Godzilla is spotted.
Lizard. So good. Lizard. It's a clip. It's the teaser for the new Pixar film.
That movie looks cute.
So the issue is I cannot figure out how to get the Rebels and Robots Instagram to have notifications. I just don't get any notifications. I don't know why. I've tried turning them on. I don't know what the problem is. That's why. I'm not ignoring them. I'm just not going into the account. I apologize.
I think he's ignoring them.
No, I don't get any notifications from it. And I've got them turned on. I don't know what the problem is. Anyways, do you have another meme?
No, but I did have one tiny piece of news.
Okay.
We all know I love to collect art books.
Yes.
Toho, in all its glory, has created a book called Godzilla, The First 70 Years, The Official Illustrated History of the Japanese Productions. And it's like got set photos and just 70 years worth of Godzilla That's stuff. Cool. And I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to buy it myself or put it on my Christmas list.
Okay, time to wrap up. As always, thank you to Caleb Jacoby for our intro and outro music. Props, Rachel, for being born.
Thanks,
prayers.
Mom.
Send our prayers. Oh, yeah, really, that's a props to Stacy.
Don't dox my mom.
First name is not a dox.
Don't dox
my mom. Saying someone's first name is not a dox.
Don't dox my mom like that.
I was going to make a Stacey's prayers mom. It's got a going on joke, but I'm not.
Don't dox my grandma with the Louis Dodgson haircut.
Prayers, thoughts and prayers to Athena, who is the fact that we haven't even heard from her at all today.
I know, I don't know if it's. She was feeling fine until I opened up the can of wet food, so I think she's just repulsed by the smell.
Let us know what your favorite form of Shin Godzilla is and why it's the fisheye, dead eye,
fish-eyed,
flopping
bloody,
on the ground version.
Bloody gills.
We don't end it anymore. We just cut it off. I don't know where to. I kind of just ramped up to an ending there, and then we don't do the sign off anymore. So. Happy birthday.